Welcome to episode 271 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on February 25th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Scott and Ben are both feeling a little burned out after a busy week of work, so they decide to take a break from the Microsoft Cloud today. Instead, they dive into all things smart homes. They talk about all kinds of things, including networks, hubs, lights, doors, locks, and window coverings. So enjoy this departure from the Microsoft Cloud. We're going to talk about tech. Although the cyber attack is interesting, we'll stick to our tech.
We're going to talk about tech today, yeah. Everyone hates the hardware episodes, but too bad they don't come on and get to talk. So we're going to do a hardware episode today.
So tell me how you really feel, Scott.
That'll tell you how my week's gone so far. So today we are going to talk about smart homes and automation, which I think is probably something near and dear to lots of folks. Like, you might be playing with smart home stuff today, or you might be just thinking about it. And there's all sorts of great tech out there when it comes to being able to automate a little bit more of your life, whether that's light bulbs, it could be outlets, could be locks, could be security systems. It could be your Elgato Stream Deck that, you know, you're looking to do something funky with HomeKit or Google or Alexa automation. There's a lot going on there. So I thought we could dig into it a little bit since you and I are both in that ecosystem and we've been playing around with this stuff for a while. And we also both made some updates and some changes to some things.
Yeah, because I think we maybe did one of these episodes a while ago, but I know for sure I have made some changes and updates. I've made a few updates and actually in the last 6 months or so. Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
I think to start with, Scott, because a good basis for all of these is a hub, right? If you're going to do smart home stuff, you have to, well, you don't have to. The whole theory is that you centrally control it from somewhere. And yes, as the Discord chat has said, put all your home tech in a private network if possible. It's on my list. That is not one of the upgrades I have done.
As you installed all this new stuff and you know you need to do this, you didn't take that as an opportunity to move forward there.
So no, because I still had a bunch of stuff there. So I integrated the new stuff. We're already going off on a tangent from hubs, but since this got brought up in Discord, we're going to run with it. I made an upgrade, so I have all the Unify networking stuff, and I made a switch not relatively recently, maybe a year ago or so. I switched from the Unified Security Gateway to the Dream Machine Pro, and I was able to take the backup from my Unified Security Gateway and move it to the Pro. However, what I discovered as part of that upgrade was policy-based routing is supported on the Unified Security Gateways. It is not supported on the Pro. And while it's not supported, I have a theory that some of my JSON configuration that I did to enable policy-based routing on the USG is buried in the depths of my Pro somewhere that I can't get to when I did a backup restore. And it is messing with my subnets and my routes and my various networks. And what I really want to do is completely reset my UDM Pro, like factory default everything, and reset it all up. So I've been avoiding moving all the smart home stuff and all of that till I blow it away and reset everything up. And I'm avoiding resetting everything up because there are a lot of ports and security rules and all of that that I would need to reopen to do all of this.
I think you should think about it a little bit. Like if you're going to sit down and plan it all out today, I it's kind of universally agreed that the best practice is to think about segmentation for your smart home devices, be they the hubs that maybe something connects to over like Bluetooth or Zigbee,
yep,
or it's just a straight Wi-Fi device, like lots of light bulbs and things like that. They just come and they're Wi-Fi enabled in the light bulb itself. So as long as the switch is flipped and the light consistently has power, then you just join your Wi-Fi network and go ahead and come on board that way. You know, you just kind of think about maybe segmentation to get all of that stuff off on its own. You can certainly give it its own subnet. You can go as far as maybe segmentation in your case, because you have a router that'll get you there, is VLANing all that off. Things get a little bit weird once you start doing VLANs. Like, I know the couple of times I've tried it, I've just had to revert to, I think, what a lot of folks do, where you have kind of your regular network and then a guest network that all your IoT devices kind of go on. Like I ran into trouble with some Apple stuff like HomeKit on VLANs and figuring out like port forwarding for Bonjour and MDNS. And like, this isn't worth it. I still want my smart home, but I do want this stuff segmented. Like I still like it knowing when a new device pops on my network and what it's doing and how it's getting to the internet.
Yes. And that's part of where my complexity comes in. So I have one VLAN that is the family VLAN. That's where right now, like the Sonos speakers are, which technically smart home device should probably be on a smart home VLAN. But things like the Roku is, where all the family's computers connect to, the kids' iPads are on it. That's on one VLAN. And then I can set up some internet filtering on it because I want the kids on a network that is super locked down, especially with their ages. Then I have a work VLAN that has all of my stuff on it. I tend to put my phone on it, my iPad, because it's not quite as locked down. So I can get to certain social media sites, things like Reddit, that type of stuff. And then I want another smart home VLAN. So when I have three VLANs and I have like a Roku on one VLAN, I have my iPad on another VLAN, and then I have like smart home stuff in another VLAN, the amount of ports and port forwarding and all of that that has to get opened, or I end up having to switch like my phone between all these different networks in order to control stuff, gets super complicated. So thus my list of rules and my firewalls and directions on which way traffic is allowed and ports that are open between home or family and work and smart homes. To your point, it gets super complicated and takes a fair amount of planning so that like I open up the Sonos app on my phone and it can actually see the speakers and control them on a different VLAN. Or I can print. My wife and I can print from two different networks. I have the printer port to think about.
But you feel like Mr. Wizard when it all comes together, though.
Oh, absolutely. You like become a networking genius when it all works. Yeah. And then you have the guest network for everybody that comes to your house and is like, what's your Wi-Fi password? And you don't want them to control any of that stuff. So I also do have a guest network as well.
I'm one of those that my guests share the guest network with all the crappy devices. Like if there's a smart bulb that's on the network that's harvesting traffic, it's definitely harvesting it from guests.
Yes. So once you get all that networking and VLAN set up, Scott, back to the hubs. What do you use for hubs?
I've gone down a bunch of different paths with this. I started out with being, I think, aligned to the HomeKit ecosystem and kind of hopping on the Apple train. Like I have a bunch of Apple devices, and when they announced HomeKit, it was like, okay, this sounds like a decent way to go. And compatibility for devices really wasn't there at the time. And frankly, it still isn't today. It's a pretty dismal kind of ecosystem when you actually want to start to do smarter things with your smart home. There's a lot of annoyances that come along the way there. But the nice thing about HomeKit was devices are Wi-Fi devices, or they would hook up to a hub. Like a Hue light is HomeKit compatible. Hue lights are Bluetooth or Zigbee. Z-Wave kind of thing, but they're only Bluetooth and Z-Wave to the hub. They're not, the hub is the thing that then hops on the network and gives you connectivity back into HomeKit. Spend some time with that, and then kind of got into the other ecosystem of Amazon stuff with Miss Alexa. I got to be careful. She'll start talking in the background and going down that path. But once you're there, you find that, oh, then you can do Google Home as well. So a lot of those devices are kind of in those two camps right out of the gate without having any access to HomeKit. So I've got this mishmash of stuff that I've had over the years that's only compatible with certain ecosystems, because I always had this ideal that, hey, I want to buy things that are compatible with maybe like all three so I can switch back and forth. And that never bore itself out in reality. So I think today I have a HomeKit hub. Like I have Apple TVs in the house and iPads and things like that. Yeah. Those are kind of transact as HomeKit hubs for me. I have multiple Alexa devices, be they like Echo Shows, Dots, things like that around the house. And I recently, within the last 3 or 4 months here, got on board the HomeBridge train. So HomeBridge is an open source project that lets you connect non-HomeKit compatible devices to a HomeKit house and be able to broker connections to them through a HomeKit hub. So now today I'm back on the HomeKit train and I really don't worry about things. Like if I buy something and it's only Amazon compatible, I just make sure that there's a HomeBridge plugin for it and that gets everything in there ready to go. And I've been able to kind of integrate things that maybe even weren't integrated with hubs through HomeBridge. Okay. I'll throw out like Ring cameras there. I have a smart camera at the front door. Ring cameras, while they can talk to, you know, Alexa, like if you have like an Echo Show, you can say, hey, show me the front door kind of thing, but you're still relying on Ring for all their, you know, whatever security they've put around their storage for video in the cloud. You're limited by their camera actions, by the actions that can be taken, you know, on the press of a doorbell kind of thing. But there's a HomeBridge plugin for Ring, which let me convert my Ring camera over to HomeKit Secure Video. And now I just get to keep all that video locally, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, see, I think I need to go look at HomeBridge. I have not gone down the HomeBridge route. When I buy devices now, I have two SmartThings hubs. So I do the Samsung SmartThings. I ended up doing two because devices downstairs, we're in a two-story house, devices downstairs couldn't always connect to upstairs. And while the whole Z-Wave is technically mesh, sometimes when you add or remove devices, or if you have a device goes bad, all of a sudden certain devices were too far away from my hub. So I've been looking for all smart things. That being said, I am not sold on smart things recently. I haven't been a super big fan of the app. They kind of redid the whole app. I don't really like it. I have some Alexa Dots in the house. My wife doesn't like Alexa. And I have heard really good things about Apple's, like their mini. What's their mini speaker? I'm completely blanking. It's been that long.
The HomePod minis.
The HomePod minis. I've heard good things about those. I don't know if I trust Apple or Amazon with devices, but I feel like I maybe trust Apple with the HomePod minis a little bit more. I would love to get rid of Alexa and do those, but I run into that whole, like you did, the HomeKit integration with smart things. There isn't anything. But I think I could go the HomeBridge route. I've also seen more and more about Smart Assistant and running that on like a Raspberry Pi and get like the Z-Wave USB dongles and you can connect it to Wi-Fi and do all of that. So while I'm still on Smart Things, I have started to explore what can I do to get out of the Samsung Smart Things ecosystem from that hub perspective and getting off the app.
Yeah, I think if you can decide to kind of coalesce on an ecosystem, like in my case, I've said HomeKit. So that drives me in a certain way, like let's set up Homebridge and then integrate all the things through Homebridge. And then everything that you just talked about there, if I want to go buy a SmartThings dingus, hey, good. I fire up the Homebridge plugin for it. I'm good to go. I want to do Smart Assistant. Awesome. Smart Assistant directly natively integrates with Homebridge. Like, I'm all set. The interesting thing that Homebridge also does is it lets me go back the other way. So being that I still have all the dots and shows and things in the house, there's an Alexa plugin for Homebridge that lets me go and say, hey, Dingus, go turn on or off this Apple device. And that works as well, because it's native integration going back out the other side. So it's been really good just to have everything in one place. Like, I think that's something you have to consider, is like, how much friction do you want to have to interact with all these things, right? If you end up with a smart bulb that only works in one ecosystem, but your front door works in another, the reality is the language to interact with them. Like, one of the fun things about having a smart home is having a single app that you can go to, or a single set of keywords that you can use with a device that can hear you to be able to action all that. And you can't have one going where you can go, hey, turn off the light. And on the other one, you have to say, hey, go kill the lights, which some things do that. Like, you have to, you know, plan for that ahead of time too. Or if you can't plan for it, like, you know, hopefully there's something out there that can be the glue for you, like Homebridge. And back to the planning part of it.
Yep.
Like, when we're on networking and all that, you talked about like port forwarding. DNS is a consideration for you there that you mentioned, to be able to like block things on different VLANs and everything. Be prepared, like, if you go into a multi-ecosystem smart home, to either have something in your house that you can run a bunch of containers on, like maybe you have a NAS or a dedicated, like a NUC or something like that sitting in a corner, or you're just going to pick up a couple Raspberry Pis for everything. Like, at some point you end, like, in my case, I run Homebridge on my Synology NAS, but because I'm running Homebridge on the NAS, that meant I had to take my DNS with the Pi hole off the NAS because I was getting too many conflicts. So then I ended up with like a Pi for that. Like, really, I should just get a bunch of Raspberry Pis and stack them on top of each other and have one for Homebridge. I should have one for Pi hole, like maybe another one for like the next thing, like Smart Assistant or whatever that happens to be.
Yeah, that's my theory. Like, I could run a bunch of containers, same thing. Synology NAS, I could put them on that. I definitely tend to favor the route you said, though. Just buy a bunch of Raspberry Pis. They're relatively cheap, $50, if that, 34. Maybe you need a couple adapters, and just stack those up and use those. So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle, from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription, so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. So, hubs, we kind of have those ecosystems. Any devices that you have upgraded to recently that you have enjoyed having, devices you want to get that you want to play with? What are you from those different smart devices standpoint?
I think there's a couple things like you can think about that make your life easier when it comes to smart devices. And probably the canonical example tends to be light bulbs. Like, go ahead and make your light bulb start. I think that's where most people start. But one of the things you rapidly realize when you start making light bulbs smart in your house is that the switches are still dumb. And the humans who have to operate said switches or don't understand that whole ecosystem and kind of incantation of words that need to be done to turn things on and off, they just go around and they start flipping switches. So some people buy like little blocks that can go over, like here in the US, you know, with our larger switches that flip up and down, you can buy like little plastic covers for those that'll keep the switch up and locked in the on position so your smart lights stay on. But then lots of smart lights are stupid. Like if you have a power outage, turns out they're not that smart. Like the power comes back on and all the lights in your house turn on. Like there's a lot of things that don't meet the WAF, the wife acceptance factor. And that becomes pretty important. You know, whether you're married, little kids, or you're just somebody who lives by yourself and you want to be sane at the end of the day. So don't make your lights smart. Like if you're starting this journey today, make your switches smart. Like go out and get some Lutron Cassetta, like smart switches. And if I had to start over, I would 100% go down that path. I've been swapping out like room to room over to Lutron lately. That's been a great experience. The other things that I think are just like daily conveniences that make my life way easier are a smart garage door opener. So there's a little sensor on my garage door that when I'm coming home and I'm within a certain radius of my house, the garage door automatically opens up, which is awesome because if I'm coming back from a walk with the dogs or I'm driving home with groceries, like we have a refrigerator in our garage and I usually need to stop there first thing and put like drinks or things in there.
Yep.
All set. Like the garage door is just open for me automatically. I didn't need to hit a button. That saves a bunch of time. Same thing for the front door. Front door unlocks automatically. So I have this choice about which way I can go. And because my front door is smart, then it just locks itself automatically too. And like, those are probably like the three things. Make your switches smart, not your lights.
Yep.
And then pick like a door in your house that you want something fun to happen with, whether that's the lock on the door, that's the camera on the door, you want it to open, close, you know, whatever that is.
So I have done a lot of the switches. I'm the same way. Like I looked at smart bulbs and my wife was like, yeah, nope, we're not doing smart bulbs because I want to use the switch. So I've been doing switches. I've gone with a lot of GE switches and those have been good for me. That has been my preference for switches. I've not done the door yet. So this is one thing I've heard about the door. I'm curious if you have run into it, is particularly the deadbolt. I have heard that the only annoyance people have with smart locks on the front door is that if your door doesn't perfectly line up, the smart lock can be a pain because the deadbolt tries to shut and it like hits the door frame because you have to open it just like a millimeter or close it a millimeter or do something like that. How has your success been with that?
Mine's been pretty good. So I have kind of thoughts about when it comes to doors. And some of that is born out of, and maybe talk about this real quick. When it comes to smart homes, you don't have to make modifications to your home, like drastic modifications that can't be pulled out later. So maybe like swapping a light switch in some place that you rent or lease, like you don't want to do that. So maybe smart bulbs are the things that go for you. But you can do smart doors in places like that as well. So we've rented and leased properties for like years and years and years. We didn't own a house for a long time. And I've had smart doors with all those. So we use August smart locks. And August smart locks, the cool thing about them is it's a device that just hangs on the back of an existing deadbolt. So you don't have to rekey your lock. There's no new key or anything to hand out. Like the front of your deadbolt, the key side of it stays 100% the same. And then the August lock just snaps onto the back of that. The new ones are fairly adjustable. Like, yeah, if your door is all janky, you're going to have to get your door maybe like reshimmed and fixed, but it's pretty good. Earlier models of that used to kind of just try and reclose all the time. Like if you were in that situation where it just caught on the edge of the door and you'd hear the motor grinding away on it, like, oh, the kids didn't close the door. The new ones, they actually know like, hey, I'm just hitting something and I'm not going to be able to close right now. So they don't burn out the motors or anything like that. They run on standard AA batteries. They are Wi-Fi compatible. They're compatible with like every ecosystem, you know, Alexa, Google Home, HomeKit. Like they just work with all that. Like huge fan of the August stuff. And they're relatively affordable too. Like if you don't need a Like if you've already got an ecosystem and you find a model that doesn't need a hub or anything like that, you know, for like less than $200 US, you can be in there. And in some cases down as low as like 120, 130. And even though that might like sound like a lot of money, like, oh my gosh, who spends $200 on a door lock? Like if you go out and start looking at smart doors, like smart locks for your door, they get super expensive, super fast. Like some, I think the most popular ones when you just go and kind of Google Bing, DuckDuckGo for them, you're sitting up around like $300, $400 in a lot of that ecosystem.
Yeah. No, I would agree. And maybe I'll have to go look at the August. My wife has been, going back to the WAF and the whole wife acceptance factor, my wife has been a little bit leery of exterior facing doors, just because she's like, it's a smart device. I don't want somebody to unlock my front door because they somehow got access to the Wi-Fi and were able to jump on it, or something malfunctioned and the door just randomly unlocked or something like that. So she's been a little bit more hesitant from the whole lock perspective when it comes to some of those devices.
I haven't had a lot of that. Like the August stuff's been rock solid. The reality is if you forget to change the batteries, you just keep a key around. Yep. And it's the same key that you had anyway. You didn't have to rekey the locks, like I said, or hand anything out like that along the way. They've got, you know, accessory keypads and all those kinds of things. I've had them for 3 or 4 years now, and I've had multiple models. Like I started on Gen 1 and I'm on Gen 4 now, and like they've been awesome the whole time.
Okay. So the one I have recently did, this one has gotten a pretty good wife acceptance factor. I have started doing, and they're smart, but they're also automated as shades for our windows. So when we originally had our house, we had blinds on all the windows. The cords to open and close the blinds, the little sticks to twist them open and closed. Truth be told, in terms of the whole, whether we want them open or closed, our blinds, we don't need three states to our blinds. We don't need them closed or up or down, closed or not closed. It's really, we want to block the light or block people from seeing in, or we want them up. So doing like the whole roller shades has been fine, but a lot of our windows are like above couches. So in terms of like crawling over the couch and reaching up and grabbing it and pulling it down, I was like, let's try some of these motorized blinds. So I not only did motorized, I did smart motorized. So we still have a remote that like sits in a drawer downstairs where we put a couple of them. And we can push the button up and down and they go up and down, but they're also smart. So a lot of times we will put the blinds down or the shades down whenever we feel like in the evening, if it gets dark, if we're inside, sometimes we leave them open. But now like every morning at sunrise, all the blinds go up. So we can come downstairs, all the shades will be open. I have one in my office too, so I can tell the smart speaker on my desk to open and close the shade, and it'll go up and down because sometimes I'll get sun coming in my eyes. Again, at night, it just goes down at sunrise. I'm not in my office at night, close the shade at sunset. Close the shade at sunset, open it at sunrise. It's really kind of handy. So to the point my wife has asked if we can start doing these motorized shades in other windows of the house, particularly downstairs, a couple other windows. And one of the comments in Discord is new blinds or an adapter. It is brand new shades. These are not cheap. They are not. I did a bunch of shopping around and looking for them and found a company. I didn't even know you could do this on Amazon. It is, I think it's Yolax from Amazon, Yoolax. But you can essentially order a custom size. You go onto Amazon, you order them, you measure your windows, they tell you how to measure. You can pick the color, you can pick the fabric, you can pick the style, you can pick if you want blackout or not blackout. You actually do it all right on Amazon. They email you, confirm all the sizes, and then they go make them to fit your window. They tend to run between $300 and $400 per window. At least those do. The one in my office I got is IKEA. It's not custom fit. You like set how far down you want it to go. You deal with the width and hope it's close enough. That one is still like, I think it was like 150, 180 US dollars.
Yeah, they are expensive. The other thing that you can look at, I'm like a super fanboy person for Lutron. And one of the weird things about all these smart home companies is they all have these sub brands. So there's Casetta by Lutron is all their smart lights. They also have Serena by Lutron, which is all of their shades, but they're in the same ballpark, like you said. Like it's for average window, you're looking at between like $300 and $500, depending on the material, motor, type of shade, everything that you choose along the way.
Yep. To me, again, they've been worth it. Even as the kids, like if the kids want them closed, they know where the remote is downstairs. We don't let them play with it or they'd be going up and down all day. But now we're not having to like climb on couches and reach over couches and all of that to shut them. We don't have strings and sticks and all of that hanging down everywhere. That's one that I'd like to do more of. It's just going to be a slow upgrade them here and there. And I want to see, like, this is the first time I've done these Yolex or Ulex. I kind of want to see what is the longevity of these? Because if I do 10 windows at $300 a pop and I end up having to replace them every 2 or 3 years, that's not going to fly.
Yeah, I know some people have had Serena for a couple years now, and they absolutely love them. But they've never changed in price or anything like that. There's no motivation for any of these companies to bring those prices down.
Yeah, exactly. And in Discord, they were asking, is it battery operated? All of mine, yeah, they're all battery operated. The one from IKEA, it's pop out the battery and plug it into like a USB charger and charge it that way. The ones, the Ulex ones are battery operated, but you can't take the batteries out. So you do have to like, once every however many months, they say they should go like 6 to 9 months before they need a charge. You have to plug, like, it's a USB. I think it's micro USB. You have to plug it in and let it charge. So they send you like a big old long USB cable with a micro USB adapter. When I ordered them, you can customize where you want the motors. So I intentionally ordered them with the motors right above where I knew there was a wall outlet. So I can, every few months, plug it in, run a USB cable up, plug it in for a few hours and unplug it. So that, and I know Scott just sent me a message that he has a meeting. That's been mine. I've done some other stuff lately too. We can save those for another future smart home discussion when we both are overwhelmed.
Yeah, at some point we should come back around to it and talk about security. I think there's more to say on the lock side of things, certainly window monitoring. Cameras? We didn't even touch on cameras.
My alarm, my window and door alarms are smart home now. Like the sensors on them are all wired into our house and I made them smart. So we can talk about that too. So definitely we'll have to circle back to that. So with that, thanks to everyone in Discord that joined us. If you aren't in Discord and you want to come, we had a lively conversation in Discord today. Go sign up for the newsletter. Let us know. Get added to the Discord server and join us while we chat and have some fun chatting with everybody else that joins us in Discord.
Yeah.
So go to your meeting, Scott. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.